Welcome to the Access Astrology Podcast. I'm Arwen O'Neill, and I'm here with my friend Allison Price, and we are coming to you from Vancouver, Canada. This week, we are going to be talking to our special guest, Michael O'Connor, an astrologer from BC, and we will get into a deeper conversation with him shortly, but if you wanted to say hello?
Hello, Arwen and
Hi.
Allison. Good to be here.
Good to have you.
Thank you.
So first we're going to do our transits like we usually do and then talk about the moon phases. We are talking about June 15th through 28th today.
Right.
And the first thing that's exciting that's happening in the next 2 weeks is that Mercury is going to be going into Gemini.
Fantastic.
Yay. And Mercury's happy in Gemini. It's a gossipy, chatty, outgoing, informal sign. And it's informative and it can be flighty, but always... always a fun conversational sort of energy there.
Mm-hmm.
So a few days later, we've got the Sun conjunct Mercury, so obviously a lot of Gemini energy there. And then the next day, the Sun goes into Cancer, which is a nurturing, warm... it's good for making new contacts with people and for spending time at home, inviting people in, possibly cooking for them.
This is the summer solstice, right?
Yes, exactly. Well, it's the day before. It's the 20th. Sunday, the next thing we've got happening is Venus going into Gemini. So pile up in Gemini. Venus is anything going on with Venus in Gemini that you want? No, it's flirtatious. It's open-minded. It's good for mingling and meeting people, but maybe not great for commitment. I'm gonna just go out on a limb and say that.
Put that out there.
And then we have the Tuesday, the 24th. We've got Mars opposite Uranus, which is bit of a heavier sort of thing happening there. Sudden conflicts can erupt, confrontations, outbursts of aggression that have been maybe on the back burner or just simmering can suddenly ignite. So watch out for that. Drive safely. Yeah.
And so then, that's bringing in a Tisco, is it? Pluto must be, right?
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Indeed. That whole April thing coming back to haunt us. And then on the Sunday, the 28th, we've got the Sun trine Neptune, which is a nice, flowing, happy, imaginative, easygoing, lines blurring, dissolution kind of an energy. But very, very spiritual, empathic, artistic sort of thing happening there.
So a bit of a mix of aspects in this, this 2 week period.
Sure, we have. Yeah, absolutely. But it's all, you know, under this sort of really nice, sparkly sort of Gemini, you know, I would say haze, but it's the opposite of a haze, whatever that is.
Clarity, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Haze with clarity. Excellent. And what's the moon doing?
Yes, well, as I say every time, the moon is always moving. During this two-week period, we just have a couple of phases coming up. On the 19th of June, we've got the last quarter. So the moon is then at that point moving from the lighter side of the cycle. It's going to start moving it through the darker side of the cycle. And that is in... Pisces, yes. And then we're moving on to Friday the 27th of June, we have the new moon in Cancer. Now as we know, as we've spoken before, the new moon is a time to start new things, do our new moon wishing, if that's what we're wanting, depending on which house in your chart the new moon occurs. And in your case, it would be what? Five Cancer.
Yeah. Ninth for me, certainly. Yeah.
In your ninth house, so you could do new moon wishing for ninth house issues of what?
Oh, education.
Understanding.
Yes. Justice. I don't know. Yeah.
Justice at the lineup.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Something like that, broaden your horizons and that type.
Indeed. I am always doing that. Trying to, anyway.
Okay. Well, when the new moon is there occurring in your ninth house, that is the time of the year for you to do that. Yeah.
Yes.
So that's great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's really all I've got to say, because then we're starting the whole new cycle again at the Sun-Moon conjunction, new synodic cycle, all sorts of
things. New synodic cycle and plus summer solstice and all kinds of...
Summer solstice if you're in the north, so we love it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For everyone else, you know.
So that's a little bit of a roundup of the transits popping up in the next 2 weeks and what the moon's up to.
Yeah. Let's chat with Michael.
Yes.
Oh, wonderful.
So how long have you been a professional astrologer?
Practicing 20 years.
Excellent. How'd you get started?
I came by it rather naturally in my teenage years. Just bumped into it through an essay requirement in high school.
Interesting.
Yeah, the teacher asked us to write an essay on astrology. And
really?
Yeah, I presented something of a semi-skeptical perspective, but then mentioned, but I'm happy to give it the benefit of the doubt. And then did a pro and con on various characteristics of my own sun sign, Pisces, and found that it was quite interesting what it provided in terms of personal insight. So one thing led to another, and I kept reading books, still reading them.
Interesting.
Yeah, never stopped.
That's probably a very uncommon way to come at astrology, is sort of through the, you know, arguing it against it until you're convincing yourself, you know.
It wasn't a big argument. It was fairly quickly won in terms of an interest.
Yeah.
Wasn't hardcore, you know, skeptic. Some people present themselves as skeptics. They're not really, well, they call themselves skeptics. So I call myself a healthy skeptic. To me, is an open-minded person.
Yes, exactly.
A lot of people call themselves skeptics, but they really close-minded.
They're fundamentalist, non-believers.
Yes, they're kind of lazy, kind of sitting back, kind of just casting aside things. It's sort of an ego inflation thing they do.
Yeah.
I can brush aside this and that. Look at how powerful I am.
Right.
Oh, okay, wonderful.
It's a very fundamentalist energy, too. It's very, you know, strident sort of,
yes.
They don't look into your things.
I'm a big voter on prove or disprove. Until then, don't say much because, you know, you don't know.
Yeah.
And astrology is one of those very big topics where so many people who have any amount of integrity to study it know, well, there's something really going on here.
Something.
But that just shows you how much selective perception is the modus operandi for many people.
Definitely. Well, for all of us, really, but, you know, because we can only perceive
for all of us. Yes. There's this lovely saying that says, those who are asleep think they're awake, and those who are awake know that they're asleep and dreaming.
Yes, totally. There is no spoon.
There is no spoon, yes. So in other words, you have to be aware of your subjectivity to increase your objectivity.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, definitely.
Otherwise, you think you're objective. Uh-oh.
Yes. Just being an objectivist, but we're not going to get into that. So, I mean, yeah, this is fascinating. So then from high school, you when did you begin consulting or teaching?
Approximately when I was 17, I started studying, and I was really quite into, you know, the whole questioning and wondering of it and diving into it in various ways. I studied numerology and tarot to study astrology simultaneously, all three. They began pretty much right then. But it took until about the age of 30.
Yeah.
When I finally realized a couple of years later that I was going to do it professionally. But it still took a couple of years to pretty much get it going more fully.
Mm-hmm.
And I started writing a weekly horoscope. I'm still writing the same column now.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And so that's brought me the attention that I was, I suppose, needing to present myself as having some authority,
right,
and taking it seriously enough, etc., to talk about it. And I many years ago started doing a tip of the week. It's become kind of a standard norm, but it wasn't always.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be if you were born on this day,
right?
But I was determined to educate.
Yeah,
it's interesting because it's become a standard now.
Yeah,
and people say, "Oh, you didn't start that." I'm like, "I bet I did." Because I've been writing a horoscope for 20 years. How long have you been writing your horoscope?
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a long time, huh?
Definitely.
I mean, you know, 93.
It is.
Since 93, and I read, and there was a few, you know, I've read good horoscopes over the years, but it's not like I overly celebrate horoscopes, by the way, but I do understand how they can work.
Yeah.
On the basis of like a fractal.
Yeah, yeah.
The sun sign as a fractal. You know, there's only 12 people out there.
Right.
That sort of riddle. You know, you're right. It's not true because it's a paradox, right? On one hand, you know, if you read your sign versus in your horoscope, you kind of relate, but if you read another, you don't as much. Some people will say, though, skeptics will say, well, they're all the same, kind of. Well, yes, because we're reading the same chart this week.
Right.
In any case.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah, stuff like that, so
Are you talking about really the sun sign horoscopes?
Yes.
Just the sun sign horoscopes. Okay. Yeah, they just that they shouldn't work, but they do. And that's the beginning of the intrigue and the fascination.
Yeah.
How does this work?
Yeah.
So I'm quite interested in how astrology works and why. Mm-hmm. Not just that. That is good enough, but how and why does it work? And it's carried me into studies of many things, multidimensionality and the true nature of archetypes. Mm-hmm. People talk about archetypes. I go on, I look and go, you don't really know what archetypes are. Because archetypes are shapes. Mm-hmm. They're actually shapes. So people kind of take, well, the prince and the princess or the... Which are true, they're archetypal expressions in a more kind of...
Humanistic.
Humanistic is a good way of saying it. Humanistic, yes. But when you get into the building blocks of creation, the blueprint,
yeah,
and you get in there, so you get into a sacred geometry world. Mm-hmm. And then you go deeper into that and you go into a sound world.
Yeah.
I'm big on that.
Yeah.
The sound brings form, brings shape. You've seen that in the semantics?
I
probably have. Where you emit sound into a chamber or onto something that will receive it in a very direct way. It'll create a mandala.
Right.
It's very beautiful to see that. It's worth watching.
It's interesting.
Are you saying the chart as a starting off point for this further exploration?
Just sort of the chart, like the zodiac itself. Mm-hmm. Even to me, when we talk about the zodiac, you know, there's the constellations, and I always like to say, don't assume that the constellations are the zodiac. The zodiac is actually the cycle. Well, I mean, in Western astrology, mm-hmm. you have to be specific, right? To different systems, but the zodiac is really the circle of life. Mm-hmm. So it opens the door. So which circle of life are we talking about? But really, to me, it's ultimately, just like we established here in the West, it's the seasons.
Yeah.
It's the solstices. It's right. The equinoxes. The starry background are the projection, but the tendency is to assume that the constellations kind of came first.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I would say, well, how do you figure that the cow, the bull, came before the bull? It really doesn't make much sense now, does it? Mm. So, but there's that convoluted stuff. So it's a little bit of the dismantling of the misunderstanding of it. So I'm big on, in a long intro, going back to the horoscopes, I like to educate.
Yeah.
In not so much just the elements and signs and aspects, as important as those are, but I want to educate the worldview.
Yeah.
The perceptual reality. Pretty excited about that.
To raise astrology onto a higher footing, general public, is that?
Yes, to present it as the valid and valuable resource that it is, and it's not just a celebration of it, it's a celebration of us, in the sense of our relationship with existence, which weaves our innate co-creative nature.
Yeah.
We co-create in spite of ourselves, not even whether we try or not.
Absolutely. I mean, you can tell that looking at any ancient civilization that has things that we've managed to dig out of the ground or that are still standing. It's all about either the planets and the stars or, you know, killing each other. Like, we found arrowheads and we found, you know, massive pyramids and shapes that were, you know, looking at the stars. So I think that's a fascinating, you know.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And every culture that we've found that, you know, that has built anything that we've managed to still find. Yeah, the pyramids in South America.
It's all about directions and alignments.
And incredibly detailed, incredibly accurate.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Maps of the stars, maps of the seasons, and just a startling similarity of technical, you know, understanding that these cycles are valid and, you know, like relevant to our lives.
Mm-hmm.
All of our lives.
It's the first science in religion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was a weave of astrology and astronomy, which gave birth to calendars and clocks and observations and
absolutely
ceremonies
and
rituals and everything. And that we've developed into an astrology that looks at character is interesting, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we're sort of taking it from what used to be just, you know, the benefits of being royalty. You know, all of the ancient rulers had, pun intended. I mean, you had to know the astrology of the king because that was the fate of the kingdom, right?
Exactly. Just like in modern day society, every country, every state, province, city, incorporated town has an astrology chart.
Yeah, because they all have an incorporation date, minute.
Because they have a signature, whereas in more traditional ancient times, there was no signatures per se.
Yeah.
It was more, but it was like, there may have been some ceremonial moment, though, like the inauguration of the king.
Certainly.
Or the queen.
More feudalistic.
And those ceremonies would have infused the astrology and so it's changed somewhat, but it's a beautiful thing and always makes me wonder about how it works. And I always think it's because we're not simply in it.
We're part of it.
We are it, and it's a paradox. We're it experiencing itself. That's a beautiful mysticism, isn't it? And then to see it geometrically, as with the zodiac or the horoscopes, one's natal chart, that geometrical fractal, I call it generally. It's a bit of a stretch on the word fractal for some, but it's this portrayal of how consciousness pervades all things. And you start going in there and you get into the laws of nature, I would say. Into, well, and as the saying goes, if there's laws, there's a lawmaker.
Yeah.
I'm big on that. I'm big on the spirituality aspect, as I think many astrologers are, but not all, right?
Yeah.
Some are very corporate. Very, and which is fine too. They have their reasons. It's all good. But I'm into the spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
The evolution, you know, the
personal evolution, like the
personal evolution, not of the species,
yeah.
Which to me is fundamentally a practical story of self-actualization.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that is left open in a final analysis to each and every one of us getting to have the final choice as to what constitutes that self-actualization, if you follow.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives us that free will, that dignity to say, well, we can choose, you know, many people born on the same day, for example, aren't all achieving fame.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's various, all kinds of reasons why and variables. And sometimes just good old-fashioned focus and perseverance, right? They say famous people, well, there's talent, of course, but often, at least, it's who stays the longest.
Yeah.
who goes the hardest, or how you play the game.
Yeah.
So it weaves in that free will factor. All of which is sort of to say that, you know, sometimes people think naturally, of course, astrology's out there. I'm like, actually, it's not. It's really in there. It's really in there. So in there, make you crazy, because the out there is really coming from the in there, and you know what is coming from in here and being put out there, etc., is all a reflection of the same story.
Yeah,
it's a riddle.
That reminds me of one of my famous. I'm gonna go the wrong spiral here by trying to paraphrase Alan Watts, but here,
yes.
Just jump off and do it. One of my favorite things that he ever said was, if you think about how you're looking at stuff out here, you guys, for example, that I'm looking at, they're out there, but really what you are is a reflection on the back of my retina that I'm looking at upside down inside my head. So you think you're looking out here, really what you're doing is you're looking literally, physically.
Yeah.
Because of the shape of the eye.
Yes.
The back of your own head.
Yes.
Which is so bizarre and great.
Yes. And, the riddles of perception. Alan Watts is really, really quite masterful at that.
Yeah.
I quite appreciate him.
Yeah.
Do you do it or does it do you?
Right. Right. Yeah. And the whole thing of the fractal, he was talking about, I guess, quantum physics and how, you know, the whole universe expanding and expanding exponentially, like faster and, you know, accelerating and all these things. And then at the same time, when, you know, you get stronger and stronger microscopes, you can see, you know, inside the tiniest, tiniest, tiniest thing that you used to think was Yeah, the very limited how tiny you can think, and then there's, you know, strings on, like, you know, vibrating and all these things, and the smaller you can see, the more there is to see. And of course it's that way, he says, because it has to be. What else could it be? It's, you know, it's always going to be that way. You're always going to be able to see, you know, farther, and then there will be more stuff, or, you know, deeper inside the, you know, I'm doing these things with my hands.
No, it's true. It's there's a truth in that. It's the temptation of thinking to get to the bottom of it.
Yes,
is natural.
Yeah.
I can't blame anybody for wanting to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
But it's a misunderstanding of how reality works.
Yeah. Yes.
It's bottomless, yes. Basically.
The
also, or if you go deep enough, well, you're gonna get into another dimension.
Mm.
And once you open up that next can of worms, you'll be in another state of affairs. So even the Higgs, as a matter of fact, from what I understand it, the Higgs boson discovery there, wonderful date of July 4th, 2012.
Is that true?
Being the official date of announcement. You know, this is the day. Okay, how wonderful. Makes me wonder if somebody bought that one. But
close enough, we'll see a little logo.
Yes, that's possibly true. It's just that it has itself given rise to this sort of thinking, this more metaphysical consideration, and that's why they sort of shut it down quick. It's
what you get for calling it the God particle, isn't it?
Someone
should have nipped that in the...
Well, you see, the science, I'm pretty big on this kind of stuff. The science presents, it stands firm to this day on this model that matter precedes life.
Yeah.
It's like...
And then complexity, something magic happens, but it's not magic.
Yes, it's more, much more paranormal than the paranormal.
Yeah.
It's much more magical, fantastical, and everything other of the sort than is, you know, it's as sci-fi as it gets.
Yes.
You know, to assume that position. So it's really a case of calling the kettle black.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a funny game we're playing right now.
Yeah.
So now, I'm sorry that we've strayed a little bit, but this, in terms of that deeper, wider background story behind the astrology, and then my interest is, as an astrologer, more I can study, understand, and know that deep, wide, interdimensional kind of notion of soul evolving, and then I come back to the realization that we're souls incarnate, we reincarnate, we're at a certain soul level, we have a dharma, which is wrapped up in karmic patterns, which is manifesting as a, you know, in conscious, current language, self-actualization processes, comes back. Anyway, the long and short is, the more I know the deep and wide, the more I can look at that chart and understand it more instantly. That's what I've thought of. That's because, I guess it's my Piscean mind, the excessively linear thought wasn't going to work for me.
Yeah.
I would get too bogged down in a detail, but that doesn't mean when I look at a chart, sorry, for example, yours, Erwin, it's not like I pretend that I've got you all figured out, because I always like to say, how are you embodying these archetypes? You know, because no two people can embody them the same, right? So it becomes a nice, ever-present sort of mystery, you know, and then I always like to say, well, how are you? Not trying to fit you into that chart.
Right.
No.
But
wear those clothes?
Yeah, exactly.
How do you, you're right.
Yeah.
It's a nice way of doing it. It's a nice namaste, it's a respectful thing to me.
And how do you approach your clients like that?
Yes, I don't want to put them in the box, and I don't want to think anything's absolute at all.
Yeah.
Everything is probabilities and possibilities.
Yeah.
Yes, we've all, you know. Yeah, the probability factor's there all the time. And that's the heads up. That's what our job is in terms of forecasting.
Yeah. I like it. It's much more helpful as well, too. Mm-hmm. When you're talking to someone, you can, you know, you can tell a few things. Probably you can weed out some possibilities right off the bat, you know.
Yes.
But you know, if you give them a range of things, well, you know, this coming transit or whatever can be, you know, it could mean something to do with education, or it could be, some sort of thing with the law, or, you know, giving people sort of a range of it's not just keeping your bets open so that you're not predicting something inaccurate. It's more, it's actually helpful, I think, to the person, you know.
There's certain, you know, as, I mean, I guess over the years and one's perspective changes slightly, but, and there's certain, one's style begins to emerge, I suppose. But one, I have to think, careful myself of habit. Don't want to get too habitual, but on the other hand, some things speak louder than others and so forth and so on. I tend to leave any forecasting of transits and stuff way to the end, even if I don't get to them.
Yeah,
I won't even be too concerned. I'm more of a humanistic astrologer.
Yeah.
So I'm really into who are you, and I figure if I can help you hit that core in something of a conversation, conversational, then it's more important than knowing what's going to happen.
I think in a way that's what people want, even if they don't think that. If they really come in saying, you know, am I going to meet the love of my life and get married in the next year? I think what they're really asking, and, you know, people could say, you know, they will argue this till the day they die, but what they're really asking is, am I okay? Am I doing this, you know, okay, am I doing me to the best of my ability, right?
In a way, yeah, they're also saying, tell me who I am back to me a little bit.
Yeah.
Mirror it back to me,
they
yes.
They don't want to change.
It's not just that. That's partly that they can change. They can improve.
Change happens to all of us eventually, and we do change gradually, but we can't force ourselves to change in a specific way usually.
Right. We can choose to shift our perception, our attitude, and so forth.
Yeah,
which
we can become aware that it's better to be a certain, you know, different way, and then gradually move towards that.
Yeah, it's what I've come to realize is, you know, the attempt to be perfectly accurate with the prediction is a type of astrology which is more traditionally true.
Yeah.
Like, okay, which can be valid if the person's significantly seeking that prediction. And after a first session, maybe even a second, then it's more healthy, I think, to start to ask about probabilities of the future that, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But it ever remains, what are you going to do about it? Because otherwise, they're subtly putting the responsibility in your lap. You're going to, hey, how about you live my life a little bit?
Yeah.
And like, how about you take responsibility back? You have to live, you know, your life. This is a map. You're the territory. What are we seeing? And what are you going to do? But it's, of course, it's not exactly in that specific tone. There's a certain amount of, you know, entertainment, edutainment, you know, I call edutainment, you know, educating, then in an entertaining fashion, and a playback. And of course, the goal, it's a little bit tricky. Sometimes I'll find myself there and the person says, oh, no, you have any questions, you know? I'm sure you often do. Yeah. You have any questions? They'll say, no, no. They say 5 minutes towards the end, I'm thinking of leaving my husband. Okay. Well,
I call that the doorknob question. They've got the hand on the
door. Yeah. Oh, just one more thing.
By the way.
Yes. Oh, just one more thing.
Hilarious.
I had somebody recently say, do you know when I'm going to die? And
did you?
Yeah. Did I say that? No. I said, you know, you can look at the probability, but it's very important not to auto-suggest you necessarily. Also, I don't want to play on your death wish.
I could probably tell you a couple of like areas in which to be more careful, but not days.
Stuff like that. It's very so in other words, I guess indirectly, it's just suggesting that it's a very delicate art, and the art of communicating the translation, the interpretation. I tend to do my best to be very careful with the words.
Yeah.
As would, I think, most astrologers.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And what would you say, Michael, is particularly, say, in your chart that leans you towards the humanistic approach to astrology that perhaps others don't have? Is there something particular that you lean on in yourself?
I would think it's a fairly strong Aquarian energy.
Uh-huh.
I would imagine. I have the planet of lowest degree is Uranus, which is in Virgo, in the house of Pisces. So that adds to that immediately. The planets are stronger than the signs. Then I do have Mercury and Saturn in Aquarius.
Yeah.
Okay.
In a conjunction trailing the sun, so they're in the vocational position.
Even the sign of humanity, isn't it?
I tend to think of Aquarius as the more the humanistic sign, the democratic, humanistic, idealistic, you know, we can talk about friendly and eccentric and all of that, individuated, et cetera, but, you know, you meet many Aquarians and they're quite conservative.
Yeah.
I've met many who are very conservative, but interestingly, yeah. And sometimes even, you know, it's not a sign that makes a person open-minded or not.
Yeah.
But it remains that I would put them more in the humanistic house. So, yeah.
That's, intellectually humanistic is the way I would
Like a sort of a rights and freedoms and
yeah.
a sense of ethical mindset of not as strongly on the should as a Sag usually.
Yeah. Or the Capricorn.
Or the Capricorn in terms of the...
Maybe like halfway between the two.
Let them eat bread kind of Capricorn, you know.
But not my bread.
yes. This, let's get clear on what's mine and what isn't yours.
Yes.
Well, you know, that power. It depends on the Capricorn, of course. Some of them are. But no, it is... I would attribute it to that.
To the Aquarian
yeah,
influence, yes.
I would. I have one of those mixed synthesis charts, pretty strong... Pisces is already like that. I have all the signs fairly accented, save for Taurus.
So what you mean there for our listeners is that your planets are spread around the chart. Is that what you're
saying? Yeah. Well, it's not just that. That's partially it.
Mm-hmm.
It's...
Because not all of our listeners...
I have an interesting seesaw chart.
Okay.
Neptune on the fulcrum. I have a midpoint, so it teeter totters on Neptune, which is really interesting,
mm-hmm.
In Scorpio in the third house, which is where you get the. I tend to think of the third house beyond brothers and sisters and neighbors and so forth as perception.
Mm-hmm.
I like to go into that area. And then Scorpio is quite in. And then Neptune's the mysticism. So that's where I think,
yeah.
as a Sun Pisces, Neptune, I look for that.
Yeah. Another focus on.
Mm-hmm. But the whole chart has this interesting blend. There's something I'm going to talk about in the talk tomorrow night.
Yes,
a little bit about.
Tell us about that. Because yeah.
Uh huh. There's. I'm doing a talk here at the.
In Vancouver.
Yes, in Vancouver. That's right. At the Fraser Valley
yeah.
Astrology.
Yeah.
Shame on me for not knowing that. Well, it's my first time getting there, and funny that they don't know about me, and I didn't know about them, even though we're neighbors. You know, it happens that way.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you're giving a talk at it.
So I'm giving on. Yeah, it's called Decants, Duods, and Dispositors. So it's the idea of getting into the nitty gritty of the chart.
Mm-hmm.
I love the patterns. I love it all. You know, it's all wonderful. Whether you're looking at hemispheric emphasis, quadrant emphasis, or, you know, the patterns, whether you have a bundle or a splay or all the... Those are good. Carter, right? Who came up with those?
Locomotive, I think.
Yeah, the locomotive. Yeah. All of those. And they've even come up with a whole bunch of others. New...
I have that book.
Category
yeah.
of them. You can get those online if you just look it up.
It's
There's
really
a new series of them that I've seen that were slingshots and
right?
stuff like that.
Yeah.
But in any case, but when you get into the decants, duods, and
could
dispositors.
You explain a little bit for our listeners
those?
What a decant is?
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, it's generally widest angle statement is it's the zodiac within the zodiac.
Mm.
So it means each sign, say, has three, or each sign is 30 degrees, so each 10-degree segment is linked to the other signs of the same element. So if you're dealing with the first decant of Aries, it's 0 to 10 degrees. Then from 10 to 20 would be the decant of Leo, which is the next fire sign in the natural zodiac order. And then Sagittarius would be from 20 to 30. Then within that, the first 2.5 degrees, a duod means the 30 degrees divided by 12 equals 2.5 degree segments. So the first 2.5 of Aries would be Aries. The second 2.5 would be Taurus, which is the next sign. Then from 5 to 7.5 degrees would be Gemini duod. And you look at that, it's quite remarkable. it gives you that much more, well, the Virgo perspective.
Mm, yeah.
Detailed breakdown into minute pieces.
Yes, yes. And then you can look very carefully at various little things like the minutes. So suddenly the minutes take on a little bit more meaning, not just in terms of timing, but in terms of character.
Mm-hmm.
For example, here in Erwin, your chart, just one planet, you have Saturn at 2 Cancer 36. So it's past the 2:30 point, right?
Right.
So it puts it in the dwad of Leo.
Ah.
So it just adds a little bit of extra emphasis. And then, so on one hand, we can think of the Saturn in Cancer disposited by the moon, naturally.
It's but if we go in... and watery. It's...
Well, it's that way, right? The there's so many factors because the moon in Virgo then sort of dries up in a healthy sense.
Yeah.
The otherwise Saturn in Cancer is a little bit like ice water.
Yeah.
And ice water could be good on a hot day.
Sure.
It depends, right? But it's a bit of cool water.
Mm-hmm.
Even with a maybe you can see it beneath the ice there.
Yeah.
It's a bit cool.
As you're walking across the ice.
It would suggest, you know, generally speaking, probably father having been a bit cool.
My parents were divorced.
Emotionally, yes. Mm. And he would have been somewhat...
Absent,
but emotionally and the love factor, it wasn't easy for you to feel.
Mm.
Maybe it changed.
Mm-hmm.
But as you were a child, you didn't, huh?
No, it changed in later.
Later it changed.
It's absolutely changed.
But in the formative years.
Yeah. And also, having a teenage girl is probably very difficult for an absent father.
Regardless,
to know that she's, you know, growing up. Yeah, that's probably very difficult.
Those rationalizations are mildly excuses, right? But the fact is that...
So what are you saying now? That because Saturn's now got the connection to Leo, she still sees him as a hero, though.
Well, he's a fantastic guy, but
Yes, no, what I'm talking about is the Saturn in Cancer in the dwad of Leo creates in the formative years,
mm-hmm.
especially because it's in an early degree, an experience of where's my dad?
Right.
And then in your life, although he became your hero, it lends itself to relationships with men generally. And there's a sort of a lesson of learning where is... such and such. And
mm-hmm.
so it becomes, so I'm kind of big on the developmental psychological side in the early formative stages.
Okay.
So because that becomes the root story and that's where you're coming from.
Yeah.
So then we're stemming from this natal chart and issues of any little sort are destined to become resolved.
Yeah.
So that's what the humanistic approach would look at.
Totally, yeah.
So then, because we want to know who are you and what's, you know, resolution.
Yeah.
And then, you know, okay, well, without going on and on into your chart specifically, but...
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, oh, you don't mind? Okay, well then, that square to Pluto, it would be one of the next factors I'd be looking at. So what it suggests altogether is a karmic evolutionary need of finding your own authority.
Mm.
And in a sense, the cool, distant father that worst gave you was a lack of access, but at best it threw you in on yourself to lay claim to your own sort of inner voice. You know, what you consider important became stronger in you early.
Mm-hmm.
So you see the apparent negative, the hardship, if you like, can create the character.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So you can look at it both sides, but it's not a given that, a person could struggle a little bit still with, it becomes a part of the journey to experience that authority.
Yeah.
So I think that you, in some measure, yes, are seeking that.
A personal authority?
Yes, that authority, which is partially where this podcast radio show is such a good choice for you with the... Gemini Sag interception and Neptune there too, meaning finding in some measure the story is finding your voice.
Mm.
You're probably a very good writer.
Oh yeah, actually.
I bet you
I'm
are.
I'm not even gonna be modest.
Oh good.
About that.
Oh yeah, there you go. Yes, makes sense. That I could see you making a living and feeling it's your so you're in a general wide angle sense. I would say. core feature of your destiny is to find your voice, which will be anchored in your literary, but ideally in the course of time would come forward in, well, literary would always remain strong, but that you're talking on the radio, I think is a really good choice. It gives you kind of a peek behind the curtain, and perhaps even possibly it wouldn't be a bad idea if you wanted to push it the ante to get yourself on TV.
Oh my goodness.
Well, you know, not to say you should, but there's that, again, that would be just something of a choice.
Anything you're afraid of is a red flag that you should probably be doing something like that, I guess.
Yeah, so this just is a basic example of where I like to sort of go with it. I'd like to try and get into the deep roots, kind of into some essential stuff.
Yeah.
And so it takes, this kind of astrology, though, I think takes longer.
Mm-hmm.
You're spending more time at certain places, and it doesn't...
You mean in the consultation?
Yeah. Yes, so it doesn't move as quickly, so I'll tend to myself kind of charge less and spend more time, partially because I think... So let me guess, you never had astrology chart reading in your whole life, but you want all the answers in an hour, and is that it? Is that what you're saying? It's like, give yourself the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
That you deserve to, you know, invest a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Invest a little bit, because, you know, we throw money around all the time. They might think, it's expensive. And sometimes it is with astrologers. They can get, I think, well, there's different circles.
Yeah.
It can be very expensive. But, you know, all things considered, it's in light of what if you had 10 astrology chart readings and you spent $1,500, it would be a very well spent bit of money, especially over time, right?
You're talking about with the same person over time.
Yeah, it would probably not absolutely necessarily, but I think that would be better.
But as opposed to all 10 in one month from 10 different astrologers.
That could be good too, but I think that would probably prove a little scattering.
And a little... different thing that you're trying to prove.
Probably. Not long enough to integrate each part. Mm-hmm. I think it could be very, no, I wouldn't encourage that. No. But the point's well taken.
But
yes.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
It's a type of thinking. It's just a way of thinking. Sometimes I'll say to people, look, whatever the challenges are, you have your whole life to achieve this. Don't be hard on yourself.
Yeah. You know, and also, that's kind of your only job.
That's your main job.
Yeah.
It's your main job. And if you take an as long as it takes approach, I'll say, versus when, you'll be busy right now. You're already doing it, because as long as it takes means you're on it.
Yeah.
Where when is you're waiting at the bus stop sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so I weave in this sort of life coach element.
Mm-hmm.
That's astrologers, life coaches, consultants, we're all in the same arena, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Really.
You can't knock it out in an hour. You just can't. Even listening at the end of the hour.
It's an insult to oneself and the art of astrology in its own way. But at the same time, you can't blame people for not having a lot of background, and being open at least is good. So they start somewhere. So if you get an hour, okay, we'll go with that and we'll start somewhere. But what I'm trying to say is, how many answers do you hope to achieve, you know, and you know, what value is each one when it's been just so rushed through so quickly?
Yeah.
So it's stuff like that.
Especially when people are new to this, you know, if you're the first person that they're coming to, for example, they're probably afraid of being taken advantage of. They don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
They're used to thinking of things in terms of, okay, well, I'm going to pay a certain amount for, you know, I know what, you know, what value in other things I can get for this amount.
Yeah.
You know, so what is going to give me or whatever. But
yes,
you have to think of it a little differently, I think.
It's hard to imagine what goes into it. And you know, we know how much study we put into it. It's not what one would think. It presents itself in a very somewhat elementary fashion,
right. Doesn't
it? You go, how can that simple little map say so much? And I would say, this is a multidimensional map.
Yeah.
This tells you much more than you realize. This takes time into a lot of perspective. And it's an ongoing refinement of not just the craft of astrology, which is there, and God knows there's tons of theory and then techniques.
Yes.
I think I've invented a few, but techniques, but even if you don't know whether you did or not, right? Because not you haven't read all the astrology books, but nonetheless, it's not as important. It's just that in addition to the theory and the techniques itself, it's like a bit like having a classical education.
Yeah.
You have to have a sense of sociology and history and philosophy and ethics. Mm-hmm.
You're going to see their chart and, you know, hear about their life, and then it's going to become part of your, you know, your canon, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
part of what you think of when you look at those same aspects later, you know, you go, okay, that was, you know, mm-hmm. all becomes evidence and research.
Yeah, I like to look at the evolutionary perspective quite a bit. Mm-hmm. The, you know, and I see your sun, your moon is new.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll think, well, because I like to look at the sun as the pivot point of the chart. That's mm-hmm. the star, right? That we can deal with fixed stars. I've even, you know, that's a different tangent statement, but fixed stars offer somewhat valid information, but I've come to believe it's not really that necessary if you understand that natal chart well enough. They just elaborate upon what's already there.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're a composite of Mars and Venus and Saturn or something. So they can certainly color and add tone, I wouldn't doubt. But again, how much when, you know, unless you have an ongoing client,
it's
where every astrologer, many astrologers probably somewhat dream of having the client pay for 10 sessions and I'll be back. It's like, oh, thank you. Because not just because of the money, no, it's because of the opportunity, right? The opportunity to
explore.
Yes. The same would be true with therapists.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Whether you're a trainer, whether you're a therapist, whether you're anything, it's just like, are you going to give me a chance to really help you with this, or are you just going to kind of throw a dart?
And then I'll never know how it worked out.
Yeah.
If you took my advice, or how those aspects actually played out in your chart.
Mm-hmm. I often say to clients, just keep me posted.
Right.
Good. Sometimes, That's
really
sometimes, various things. Recently I was working with a lady in Germany, and I was looking at this window. She had this business for sale. She's like, I'm done. I'm finished. I want to sell it. I'm like, I looked at the chart. I said, it looks good, you know. And sure enough, she found a buyer. But I said, but don't wait. There's this little factor. I said, there's a window. I have a feeling she waited and she missed it. It really can be small windows.
Yeah.
It's like many things, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like you get that window right now and don't hesitate. You know, don't like, think and wonder. And, you know, I'm trying to tell you, and I'm pretty sure she hesitated and she missed the window, I suspect. And she says, you know, and she sends me an email. I'm going, oh. So that the delicate thing is, thanks for updating me, but the fact is, well, if you want to get into it, I'll actually write a comment or, well, you know, persevere this or that. But the fact is, if you're going to open up the reading again, well, we have to go again. What can you say, right?
Another window.
You have to open up another window. It's kind of like that. So we have to look again. So, that's where the free will factor really does remind me that while there's a strong probability within who we are, the world in its motion and movement due to all the accumulated free will factors, it's free will is the chaos factor.
All the interlocking spinning wheels.
the free will is the chaos factor in the world.
Yeah.
You know, it's that which increases the inability to make firm, hard predictions, which is really good.
Yeah.
Nobody needs or wants, making firm, hard predictions is really bringing more attention to the predictor than the person predicted for sometimes.
Yeah.
You know?
It's not necessarily repeatable. It's not like the people that we can look, you know, to in the past, like, you know, this person predicted 9/11 and this person predicted JFK's death. And, you know, did they repeat those predictions? Did they go on to predict the next assassination or the next, you know, whatever?
Yeah.
Well, it kind of doesn't matter because it's still cool and we still remember their names for having done that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it also shows that, you know, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
No, it's true. It's true. Yeah. It's there's that factor. So it's just a celebration that there's different levels of approach and how the strategy one takes.
Definitely,
And jumping in and proclaiming outcomes it can be a dangerous game.
Oh, yeah.
Before you get into, this is where I like to get into the core. It's like saying, I always use the example, like, you're a boxer in the ring, I'm your coach, I'm not going to predict that he's going to throw you three lefts, so you better be ready at this moment.
Yeah.
That's going to, you know, what I need to do is train you how to be really in your center and know how to handle and maneuver yourself in the ring. So that
I was just going to say, that is one of my favorite metaphors ever.
Nice. Yeah. So that you are able to be very in your reflex.
Yeah.
You have to be in your core. So it's ironically, this is kind of an ironic statement, but if we're really in our core and center and in our intuition very high, we don't need our astrology as much, right? We're really on and it's working. But on the other hand, how nice it is to be in the city and have your GPS on. Right. I drive around the city, and you know, it's so nice. You just have that GPS saying, you know, in 150 meters, turn left. You're like, well, that's not bad, right? Now, your intuitions can do that, but in a sense, what I'm getting at is the map.
Yeah.
The map. It's
the
nice.
The map is essentially, you just turn on the GPS if there's no map.
Yes, it's nice to have a map, and you know, if we didn't have a map, we wouldn't even have it. I mean, we're in the territory of British Columbia in Vancouver, of course, but you know, when you even looking at a map, you go, oh, I kind of get a sense where I'm at in the world. It's fun, right?
I like that. Picturing Google Maps, everyone.
I like seeing all of that, but still, you're like, well, that's kind of interesting because it shows how small it is and how big the province is.
Right.
But it remains, you're the territory. You are the territory in the territory. But the map gives you an added objective, which is many things, fascinating, useful, valuable, necessary, you know, to navigate. So basically, when we say our astrological chart, we're saying your astrological map.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally.
Your map of life. And that's where it comes back full circle, what we're saying about the archetypes.
Full circle. Yes.
Yes, I like that phrase. The archetypes as, you know, okay, when I said shapes before,
yeah,
sometimes we'll...
we're all tying it together.
Play with, you know, well, do you think there's a different psychology between a square and a triangle?
Hmm.
There kind of is. There's a different story there.
The Greeks certainly thought
there. Yes, there's a different story, and then you go into that sort of thinking, and it's a little bit of a play on the idea that the shape, or the other one I'll come up with is, well, who invented a circle? This is a different departure, going back to what we were saying before.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say, well, nobody. It was discovered, right? Look in the sky. There's a circle. It's hovering. It's called the sun, or it's the full moon. There it is. No inventor. We discovered what was there. And a circle's quite a perfect thing. So that goes back to that there's an intelligence in nature.
Mm-hmm.
I only say that because we've been sort of educated to think, well, nihilistically.
Yes.
That it's sort of this big bang occurred and randomly this and that. What a amazing thing, but don't take it too seriously.
Yeah.
It's just random.
It just happens, like, we can breathe the air, you know, lucky us.
Yeah, it just so happens, the Goldilocks principle, which means everything's in the right proportion.
Yeah.
It's sort of a nice little, and it's like, you guys are kidding, right? You can't even practically make that up, that you are making, making it up that you're making it up practically.
Yeah.
And you're... Stuff like that. So I kind of get a little feisty. That's where that Aquarius comes back and says, it's amazing how many so-called educated people aren't very, well, put it this way, are very susceptible to the program.
Yeah. And what we've managed to convince ourselves of, ourselves in the sense of the, you know, the rational, skeptical view, is that the one thing that we know for sure, which is our perspective as humans inside of a, you know, subjective body, is that that can't be trusted. Really? Mm-hmm. That's the end result of all of this?
You know what's really interesting about what you just said? It's a very... I listen as much as I can. I'm an auditory communicator. Really? Is a phrase out there.
Yeah.
You heard that? Have you noticed?
Right,
people go, really? This is now, if you go, you know the word like, the kids...
Right, right.
But now, just keep listening. You'll hear, really? What that's saying is people are going, we've been sold a lot of stories, haven't we? Really? Is that really what you're saying? Really? I'm awake now. Like, I'm thinking now. So nice try on the snow jobs, but, and on the smoke screens and the mirrors, But really? Really? The Big Bang came up, the whole universe came from a pea?
Yeah.
Really?
It was all in there.
Are we supposed to buy that? And that it's expanding still? Really? Can you prove that? How do we know it's just not a current in space?
Or, yeah.
How do we know? How do you know? It's like we're being sold on. So, yeah, in any case, that little really is a sign of our times. So people, you know, thanks to the internet and so forth, we're waking up, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
And what's really exciting, among other things, of course, is that astrology is a part of that awakening. And
yes.
People are beginning to look at it and go, really? Wow.
It's growing, don't you think?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Because it's a
And there's a more sophisticated person, or if I can say that, coming with. Do you find that?
Oh, yes. Yeah. You know, you and I know that astrologers, as I look at your bookcase here, are educated people. They're intelligent,
yeah.
Thinking out of the box for themselves, challenging status quo. You have to have a bit of chutzpah to get out of the being told,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you look at so many astrologers and you look at their credentials and they're brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, you have everything from BA, MA, PhD. And if they're not that, they're brilliant in many cases anyways,
yeah,
right?
Brilliant psychologists, so, brilliant historians.
Yes,
yeah.
There's the good, the bad, and the ugly in every department of the category of human life, right? And that would be true of astrology too, but, you know, to the brilliant minds studying it. And so, yes, people are waking up because it's not about it, it's about us.
Mm.
It's the human, not just the human story, but it's the, well, in some respects, it's the human story, not the history.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's our story of, and it's dynamic. I like sometimes, you know, in the solar fire, you have that,
mm-hmm.
Right? Yes, Allison. The solar fire animates the chart.
Yes.
You can show it. So I'd like to say, just let me show you the animated version of this every now and then when I'm doing a presentation. And some people get it, some people less. But what it does, it's really interesting, is it illustrates the aliveness of it.
So you can play it forward from the natal chart, like
I'll just
as it
put
it,
bring up the
or...
chart today, and I'll
oh,
put
yeah.
the animation on. You know that in the
right.
You seen that?
I think I've. Seen.
It just moves it down to click, click.
It
yeah,
go.
Yeah.
It'll. You
and
can
it
speed it.
Kaleidoscopes forward.
Right. Yeah.
I'll show you in a moment at any speed you like.
Yeah.
You can do that. So what ends up happening? It basically shows how alive it is. I
yeah.
like to say astrology is alive, and secondly. Fact is, similar to there's no two blades of grass that are exactly the same, which is its own little head scratcher. They sure look the same. But there's never been two moments in time ever, and never will be, that are exactly the same.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Right? So you think, oh, that's kind of fun to think about for me.
Yeah, definitely.
So you're like, cool.
Yeah.
Right? You're like, neat. It's no yesterday being today ever. Okay, history repeats itself thematically like Shakespeare. But not actually.
Right, it rhymes.
And it doesn't matter who has had whatever experience they've had. If you haven't had the experience yet,
mm-hmm.
That's everything.
Mm,
right?
Yeah.
That they have or we have, you know. If you haven't been on that ride yet, you don't know what that ride's about.
Right.
You can think about it and talk about it. So it brings it back home. This is where I like the humanistic. It comes back into the belly and where we can honor authorities, but we don't believe them. You know, in Eastern traditions, the guru, there's a saying, we sleep with one eye open because we watch the guru, because we know that the teacher too can be swallowed by the ego.
Mm.
So it takes what that's meant to say is, you know, which authorities are we talking about? Or if the science says, which science is it? Is the question I want
right.
to know. What do you mean by the science?
We'll pay for that study.
Yeah. What science?
Right.
Exactly. So that's what I mean by smoke and mirrors. And
yeah.
It's out there, right? It's just monopoly.
Yeah.
Right. So, and it's, some people think, oh, you're a conspiracist. I'm like, oh my God. Hello. Wake up.
Phrase that I find really annoying.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's no. I'm.
Oh, so no one's ever conspired. There aren't any conspiracies. Right?
Yeah, no,
okay.
No. Yeah, there's a saying among the more celebrated conspiracy theorists that there'd be no theory if there's no conspiracy.
Yeah.
You know, so it comes back. So I say these things partially because astrology, of course, has been thrown in that pot.
Mm.
It's intrigue and it's curiosity. And if you watch, you know, if you're watching even to this day on History Channel, it'll be all like full of, you know, woo-woo
Nazis
music.
Had astrologers.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You get all this intrigue and people are like, oh my God. And it gets all scary and kind of a little dark, right? But it doesn't come home to what I'm going to call the colorful, intricate, soul-embodied you. And, you know, and you're looking yourself back in the mirror and you think, I'm a nice person. I'm pretty good. Nobody's perfect, but I like who I am. And then who am I? Am I? Anyway, and what am I here for? And can somebody answer that? Well, actually, we can give you a few insights that you might find remarkably accurate. And they might just inspire you to, you know, maybe not make huge changes in your life, but just, but in some cases, maybe they're very big ones.
Yeah.
And in some respects, just feel more happy, more empowered.
Yeah.
Right? More,
like you're self-actualizing better or appreciating your relationships more because suddenly you realize, oh, this is, you know, my kid doesn't hate me. It's just that, you know, she's got Mercury in Sagittarius and I've got Mercury in Virgo or whatever, you know.
Uh-huh.
God, that makes complete sense to me now and I can accept her and I don't need to put her on Ritalin.
And there's
whatever.
Her Mercury square
if
Mars.
If accomplish
oh
that, please. You know?
Exactly. It
if
helps,
we can keep one kid off Ritalin.
It starts easy. There you go. That's part of it too, is that it's offers a healing an awareness. It offers an answer, which offers an understanding, which offers an action, a solution. And suddenly, voila, there it is. And you don't have to fix what isn't broken.
Right.
Because that's a part of the problem too, isn't it?
For the one non-consulting astrologer in the room, it makes paying attention to the news and other people in your life so much more interesting. Just to have this sort of frame that you can, or the filter or whatever you want to call it, that you can kind of look through things. You know, look at things through the lens of like, oh, interesting. Oh, this is happening right when the, you know, Grand Cross or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, the synchronicities, huh?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. As well as
the little hidden, you know, mechanics behind everything that happens. Mm-hmm. And just, oh, cool. I understand that in a different way.
I think a lot of people, as you said, Allison and Erwin, are waking up to it. They're beginning, people are learning to think now.
Mm-hmm.
And as they do, they realize they're rethinking. Mm. A few things, and it's not everybody, but it's I would agree with you that it's growing and rather quickly. Still, it's not like it should or has to or must, but it just is.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that respect, it's good because it is a beautiful story.
Yeah,
above and beyond all other things, isn't it? You think, oh my God, this works, and that. At the deeper level of the nice story is that it challenges the worldview that we're all living by.
Mm-hmm.
That purely materialistic, it all is chance, now get back to work kind of story.
Right.
You know that one? I mean, yeah.
It's kind of the opposite of Life of Pi, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So if our listeners would want to get in contact with you, what would be the best way for them to do that?
Can they find you online?
Yes, I have a website, Sunstar Astrology, all one word, lowercase, and I have a Facebook page. That's the same, Sunstar Astrology, where I put posts. The website is more, you know, stock with all the information about me and what I do and my services, etc. And the Facebook page is more current stuff and newsletters I'll post and even the link to my horoscope, but also video links. So I'm sort of smattering it with various, sometimes information that celebrates some facet of astrology, but other times that shakes people's consciousness. There's all kinds of new stuff that I'm interested in. Anything that challenges habitual complacent thought, especially in various departments of thinking, like especially, I have to admit, comes really full circle when it's materialism.
Right.
Material, like who doesn't want to be in the body, generally speaking, and like the body?
Yeah.
We like the stuff. Hey, it's all good, right? But materialism isn't that. The materialism is that's all there is.
Yes.
This is all, right?
Yeah.
And astrology, as you know, proves in its own way, quite convincingly, that's not true.
Right.
Right. So, and there, and it shows, and also it takes back things like evolution is not of the species. It's not purely a, Darwin did not invent the word evolution. It's older than Darwin.
Mm-hmm.
The evolving soul, the transmigrating soul, and the notion, the concept is older.
Yeah.
There's a tendency due to the education system to come up with interpretations of terms like evolution means of the species.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And we want one person to have invented one each thing, you know, to have.
I suppose yes.
Even though
it's nice and tidy.
Even Darwin's evolutionary theory was co-invented, you know, by a couple of people simultaneously at different, you know, different spots on the globe, completely independently.
And he was more fully about adaptation of the species and showing a natural inborn intelligence that adapts versus a fixedness. Right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
In any case, it's. So yes, that's some interesting thoughts to consider.
I will definitely checking out those videos. I'm always looking for things I can listen to and watch. I'd love to read, as you can see.
Oh, that one, you'll like it.
The
Thunderbolts Project is a worthwhile website to check out. It's called the Thunderbolts.
The scientists
who are.
Yeah, yeah, the
challenging
of,
the Big Bang.
I love those guys.
Yeah, they're great.
They're fantastic.
Yeah.
The plasma universe theory.
Yeah, they're really revolutionary. They're very Aquarian.
I discovered them about 12
They're very
years
purely,
ago.
Genuinely Aquarian. That long
yeah.
ago. Good
yeah.
Point. Yeah, they're hot.
Fantastic.
They're still getting hotter.
I hope so. I was worried that they were kind of just, you know.
No.
Oh, yeah, that's.
Really well, scary. I can't say how big, but it's they're real David and Goliath.
Yeah. Totally.
It's not going down so fast.
We will definitely put a link to the
yeah, that's
yeah.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
Anyone that hasn't seen it totally wouldn't watch that documentary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah, keeping up in those interesting ways is definitely an interesting way. So thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you for coming. This is
yeah.
great.
Awesome. Wonderful.
Yeah. Yes. So next week we'll be talking about cancer, because this would have normally been the time that we did that. But so if anyone out there is a cancer person and they are just dying,
okay, look forward to that. Yes.
See that next time. We want to thank our guest Michael O'Connor. Axis Astrology is produced and recorded by Roger Aaron Toews. I am Barbara O'Neill.
And I'm Alison Price.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.